Cyber Thursday, Johnny.
What?
Is it Cyber Thursday?
No, that's Cyber Monday.
I saw a thing today that said Cyber Thursday in one of my many email threads. You just get to pick, I guess.
Cyber Thursday is when Skynet takes over, becomes self-aware.
Are you going to do your Arnold Schwarzenegger impression now? Everyone has one, and they're all awful.
I won't do it. Yeah. I always think it's interesting that we're afraid of machines becoming self-aware. I always wanted to do a sketch where machines become self-conscious. Because we think machines would become self-aware and they would immediately want to kill everybody.
Right. Well,
but I think when we become self-aware as humans, we're worse. We're getting more neurotic. And what if a machine was like, do you think I'm fat? Like if a machine began hating itself.
Yeah, why don't we assume
that it's going to be negative?
If I give
you the missile codes, will you like me? That kind of a thing.
It's such a testimony to the way that we feel that human nature is superior when in actuality, if a machine achieved some level of human nature, they'd be just like us. We're a mess.
Elon Musk, he's like the crazy, he's Mr. Burns at this point.
Puts out the cologne, doesn't he?
No, that's a different thing.
Oh, sorry.
That's Jovan Musk.
He shut down his tunnel in L.A. or something.
Well, he's a stunt guy now. He's like a David Blaine at this point with billions of dollars and great ideas. He has great ideas. But he's also like...
But he's no longer with Tesla. He sold it or left it.
I don't know what's going on.
What happened?
I don't know. But I mean, we're speaking from a very unintelligent place.
Sorry, guys.
What I was thinking, though, is like he's just this guy now who he has a bunch of ideas and he can put billions of dollars in. Some of them are really good ideas.
Yeah.
But it's just like, I don't know. He's kind of a weirdo, too.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
You know, I kind of feel like that people who do remarkable things that are memorable in this world have to have some level of weirdness to them. Like, do you think hanging out with Thomas Edison would have been like a normal experience?
Yeah, but it's weird though when they're thin-skinned though, because you go, well, you did great things, and I always imagine somebody who did great things have a certain thing about them that I don't possess, and so when you see him on Twitter like backbiting with somebody, Elon Musk, you're just like, oh, no, he's just a little seventh-grade boy like all of us, just scared.
Maybe he's a machine that became self-aware, bro.
That's what happened. What I was going to say about Elon Musk, that's why I was getting Elon Musk. So one of the things he believes, he's really invested in AI, artificial intelligence. So one of the reasons he's invested in it really heavy.
And not Allen Iverson.
No, that's a different thing. Okay. Don't invest in that.
Gotcha.
He's not going to help you. But not a sponsor. But he believes that artificial intelligence not only is coming, and obviously it already is here to some degree, but he thinks it's the future. And I've literally read an article where he says we need to figure out a way. It's almost like he's saying we need to figure out a way to get on the machine's side because they are going to be their own entity. And if we create enmity between us and them, between now and then, there could be an end
world
scenario.
So he doesn't believe in Skynet.
He believes in a Skynet scenario where we just need to be good. We need to really welcome our new overlords, basically.
Wow.
So he's a little bit of a kook, but he could be right.
Wow.
And of course, he's a big Life on Other Planets guy. He wants to do like manned missions to Mars and populate other, you know.
He's like Howard Hughes.
Condos on the moon. Yeah, I don't know. It's okay. And again, he's way smarter than me, so.
Jerry, we don't know that. Have you had a direct competition with him of intelligence?
No.
No.
I bet I know more about, family ties, trivia.
I bet you do. as you were saying, I was thinking of Computron.
Do you remember the
episode from the Office?
Computron.
Where they got the investment banker from, so they call it Sabre. That's a funny episode where they get bought out. Dunder Mifflin gets bought out by Sabre.
Yeah.
But they pronounce it Sabre.
So he's written a song.
And they've written a whole song. Him and what's the...
And it's to Party in the USA. Yeah. Andy Bernard's written the song, and so...
And it's good, actually. Like him, what's her name?
Dunder Mifflin's a division of Sabre. Dunder Mifflin is a part of Sabre. So they realize it can't work.
Like as the guy walks in, he goes, we're so excited, this partnership with Dunder Mifflin and Sabre. And Michael goes, Sabre.
Sabre.
Yes, Sabre, everyone. Sabre. Yes, and they all go, Sabre.
And you see Andy holding the guitar like, oh, no. He's doing the math in his head.
That's so great.
It really is. I've been watching the last two seasons because we just watch it all the way through, and then we just get to the last two seasons. And everybody kind of like gave up on it once Carell left, and I just think that it still holds up to me. It got really weirder. And I just love those seasons because I like the ensemble cast. I like Michael Scott. Obviously, he's the glue, but I just feel like they let Dwight stretch his legs a little more, and he got really weird, and then you got to explore the farm life and his weird family more. And
I don't know, man. Look, when I watch, and I watch almost every, at least every other night, I'll, when we finish something and she's falling asleep, I'll turn on her office real low until it's too. And they always inevitably scream towards the middle and end of the episode. I've noticed patterns.
Yeah, there's a lot of screams.
I was like, that's going to wake up my wife, so I'll turn it off. But
or Andy punches the wall for the 15th time.
Right, something, yeah. But I just, when he left, man, I struggled. Like, they, it was almost as if they started just bringing in stars. Okay, so I liked it when Will Ferrell came in. But it was honestly
like
a stunt.
I did not like the Idris Elba episodes.
The what?
The Idris Elba, the first guy that they brought in, the black guy that they brought in.
Yes. What's his name?
I can't remember his name. But the actor is Idris Elba.
Idris. I-D-R-I-S?
I think so.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you can't remember the normal name he had on the show. No. But you remember his.
But he's a famous actor. He's been in a million things. Like, he's in a bunch of movies.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, I can't remember the guy. But anyway, well, and now we're going to get people tweeting us and texting us.
But
now.
He was a normal guy, though. That's what was so great. He was like exactly what you would truly expect if this was really a real thing. And his reaction to everybody, you know, when he came out of what, a steel factory or a steel company or whatever. So.
I don't know, but I like the idea of who's going to be the new boss and then bringing in the candidates. That was kind of a fun way to do it. But yeah, some of them were better than others. I didn't like him. Necessarily, those episodes were weak if you compare them to the sum of the whole. But I like the Will Ferrell two show arc that he was on.
Yeah,
were really funny.
When they're sitting in
episodes.
The bar and they can't find each other and they're sitting next to each other talking to each other.
Yeah,
I'm waiting on someone. Me too. Like, you know, this is just ridiculous. How
well? And then we watched the finale last night. So two things. Well, we watched the farm episode, which I found out about because, you know, they did
a spinoff for a while.
Well, they were.
Or a pilot.
They had a pilot for a spinoff, which it's basically called a backdoor pilot. They're going to be a mid-season replacement. And they shot this push pilot for, and it was going to be called Shroot Farms. And so they took the footage and jokes and scenes from that, like 20 minutes of it, 15 minutes of it. And put it made it an episode of The Office, which I didn't know that. So they make it makes total sense when you watch it now that, you know, he's standing there with the guy who they inherited the aunt's farm.
Uh-huh.
And they said, you know, well, who's going to take care of all this? And the music's playing in the background. It's like, I don't know. You'd be crazy to whatever. And they're putting this thing together of how are these characters going to interact with each other going forward. And the one guy obviously ended up doing, you don't know this show, but Silicon Valley is a huge HBO show. And that's the star of that show. So he went on and did that show. Wow. But anyway, that was because I saw an interview with Rainn Wilson, and he was talking about why did the spinoff not happen. And he said, well, part of me was kind of bummed that it didn't get picked up. And then part of me was like, I'm ready to get rid of this haircut and this yellow shirt, and I'm ready to put this character to bed.
Yeah.
And if it got picked up, then it's five more. It's like Frasier. It's like if it gets picked up, then you're just Dwight until you die, which he may be anyway, to be honest with you.
What else has he been in?
Not a lot, but I think he's made peace with it. You know, there's a contest, okay? So he is several charitable endeavors. He's very, like, interesting guy.
Yeah,
he's got a website that he started years ago. Even I think it might have been even before The Office, when he was just an LA actor, called Soul Pancake. So he's a very spiritual guy. He's Baha'i though, so Baha'i is like all beliefs are one, etc. Yeah. But he's a very spiritual guy, and so he has this charity called. What is it called? Haiti? Something. It's a Del. I can't remember what it is, but it's something that with Haiti. LID Haiti, I think. Anyway, so there's a site where you can register for, like, to win content. It's like winning experiences with famous people, basically. But you register, and how much you give gets you so many entries.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just draw a name at random with this computer algorithm. And if you've, you know, in the thing. And so this one was to see The Office set, like to Dwight Schrute, like Rainn Wilson takes you.
Is it still, and they still have it?
Yeah. So they still have the set, and it's in Pasadena somewhere, I think. So, I don't know if it didn't get burned up, because that's a lot of the movies. You saw that the MASH set, like the original show MASH, that set got burned up in the fires.
Wow.
It's been preserved forever. They would take tours of it still. Mm. Anyway, it's gone. But anyway, so The Office is still a thing. It's just this building on a set. And so he was going to take you on all these tours of the famous office scene.
I mean, you know, they had a lot of things happen in the parking lot, so I'm assuming that was a real building.
Yeah, it's a real building and a real parking lot. So there was like a live shot of it in the thing, so I was like,
but it was often snowing.
So I referenced it. I don't know. Well, they can make that though. But they reference but anyway, they we re-entered the thing. I entered like whatever how many. I did like $75. And you get a – well, I'm not going to tell you what you get. There's like a – because it's one of Curry's presents, but you get like a little totem of something too.
Wow.
That he gives you just for entering at a certain level. But if they draw our name, then Curry gets to go fly out and see
– just Curry.
Well, I don't know if you can take two people, but I'm hoping it would be two people. But if it's only one, I would let Curry go because she's like – Dwight's her favorite.
But nothing ever happens for one person. Johnny, even
that's
drawings
a, that's a beautiful
this,
thing. It's a beautiful
they
sentiment.
They know the community.
Nothing ever happens for one person, John Driver.
I guess.
But no. Yeah, I mean, that. Can you imagine, though? I mean, who knows? I mean, it's probably going to be somebody that gave a lot of money or whatever, and that's fine. But there were some levels of the prizes that were already taken because evidently it's been the contest has been going on for a month or so, and I'm just on the very tail end of it. So some of the awards were gone. One of them was like a signed bobblehead, like the actual Dwight bobblehead, and he signs it. Wow. And it was like you could give like, you know, for $300 to get that. I was like, I would have done that. I would have totally done that. But it was it was already taken. There was only like 10 of those available, and they got taken. But
I love the one of my favorite things that Jim ever did to Dwight was when he wraps his whole desk in Christmas wrapping.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he comes in.
But it's not real.
Well, this will take about 5 seconds to get rid of. And he, I mean, and then, of course, he drops his briefcase on the desk and he sits in the chair. And it's all literally, he has the paper just standing up and he falls. The guy's so great.
Yeah.
That.
It's a great show. It's probably the perfect show.
I think it really is.
Because it's the ensemble cast. Like, you can't, I don't know. Even Kevin, like, what a perfect character Kevin is.
Oh, my goodness.
So great.
I want to meet Kevin.
I do, too.
I want to see what he sounds like.
I think I've seen an interview with him, and he's pretty normal.
You know, they have, a lot of them, their real names. They played themselves. Yeah. Creed Bratton.
Yep, Angela. It was Angela Kinsey.
Yeah, they so they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it'd be cool, and but if we win that thing, though, I'm just telling you, it's going to be. Because that's the thing. One time.
Hey, if it's for two, look, I know.
How right, you want me
about,
to.
I know how you feel about Curry, but bro.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Well. I'm your guy here.
Am I?
No.
Are you?
No, but how much is it going to take? Just don't tell her you won. She'll never know.
You could just enter yourself today, probably.
Yeah, I don't have $75 to spend on that.
Well, that's what I was going to say is. One time Todd Hawkins asked me that. We were on the bus, on Tim's bus together, and his brother was on the tour with us, which he rarely comes out. But he said, if money was no object, what would you do? Like, what would be your leisure thing? You know, what would you do? And I can't remember what I said. I was really, like, on the spot. And I was just like, I don't know. But I think I know now what I would do. I would do, like, experiences like that. I would go travel, and I would, because if money was not an object, you could just put yourself in the scenario to go meet these people, or you could go visit your favorite places.
Yeah.
And that's just so, you can't replace that. That's so cool. But.
Yeah, I do think about those scenarios. You know what's funny is all of my scenarios, and you're going to just laugh,
yeah.
And I'm really working on this actually spiritually because I don't know what the implications are, but all of my like, oh, I got all the money that I could ever spend type scenarios.
Yeah.
Almost always end up with me on a cruise.
Interesting.
Isn't that crazy? Like, when I think about because to be honest with you, the best experience in my life in my marriage was our 10th anniversary cruise. It was, you know, a long cruise. It was celebrity cruise lines. It was awesome.
Well, there are bad cruise experiences. I think you had a good cruise experience. And so
I had another one that wasn't so great. You and I went on that same ship, by the way.
Okay.
Just not remember that? We decided then to spend a lot less money for our 15th and to see if we just, okay, let's just go cruising.
Right.
Maybe it's great.
What'd you do, the carnival?
We did carnival and it was like, I don't know, Piccadilly of the Sea or I don't know what they called it, but it was something.
Chicken of the Sea.
And we got on and I realized I took a cruise my junior year in high school with the school.
Yeah.
And it was on this old ship. And I got on there, and it didn't happen until I got into the theater, and I realized this is the same ship.
It's the same boat. Well, they decorate them. It's like you can tell when you're on a boat that's kind of the – they've not updated it. It's still like the crushed velvet and neon.
Oh, that's what it was. All the lettering was like
black. Everything's black lacquer.
Yep. Yep.
With like chrome.
Yes, very cheesy gold, you know, stuff everywhere. And the food was not great. And
it's like when you see a movie and then they show like a scene inside of like a seedy nightclub.
Yes.
That's what it feels
it's
like.
Just like that.
It was like, I'm in this shady, ugh, did this get Purell'd?
Yeah. And we had a good time, but it was like, okay, this is nothing like the first cruise.
Right.
But the first cruise was so great. Like, it has not detracted, you know, me from.
Yeah.
Like, I
you know what I think you like about the cruise, though, is you can't be reached.
Yeah. There's a lot there. Let's unpack this. Let's see where it goes.
I think that's what you're really after is if you go far enough away, you have the excuse of, oh, God, I'm sorry I missed you. I've been overseas.
Sorry, I was in international seas. I couldn't. Yeah. You know, the thing is, now that I really, like, love community in a different way than I used to, I do find that dream changing a little bit.
Like, now you want to take everybody with you.
I don't think in my dream I want to go away forever. Like, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if I have a forever. Like, what I have is, you know what I want? You know what? I told you this. What I want is when we reach 20 years of marriage, that's in 2 years, I want to go away for 20 days. When I reach 25, I want to go for 25.
Right, you've told me this.
So every five. So, my gosh, when I've been married 45 years, I mean, let's go away for 45 days. But I want to have the money to do that.
If you make it to 80 years, 80 days in a nursing home. And then you just, it's hospice care, basically. That's good.
Oh, dear. No, but I do. I want to. So I do have this, but I am that introvert that likes to get away and recharge either alone or with my wife or my family. Now, some of my best trips have been to Disney with my kid.
Right.
And I enjoy those. It doesn't have to all be restful, but I don't know. I'm a real recreate what was once great.
That's hard because then you, if it doesn't live all, up or if there's a bad day or something.
I've learned. Our very first trip alone after our honeymoon was 2 years later. We went to Destin, and it was like, the trip. It was actually where she first convinced me to read a Dave Ramsey book. I didn't want to do it, and then I couldn't put it down, and it like opened up my eyes, and we began communicating about a lot of things about, because it's really not about money. It's really about your value systems. This is how you look at life. This is how you try to purchase happiness. This is how you try to mitigate what you're feeling by spending, you know, irresponsibly this way.
Or impress somebody you don't even know, et cetera, with a new car or whatever.
Yeah, so it's a whole lot more than just, oh, this is how to do a budget.
It's a weird book to read on a vacation, though.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's just so unorthodox. And we would walk the beach for hours and talk
about your envelopes.
And made a new, we made like a new life plan. We came home, got out of debt, but we had never been more synergized.
But y'all don't still do the envelopes.
No, we don't do envelopes anymore.
Yeah.
Because, I don't mean cash just doesn't, I don't know. I have a system that works through digital methodologies. Yeah. But we came home, and then so the next year we were going to Hilton Head.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, it's going to be destined.
You just take a lot of vacations.
It's going to be destined.
Like, you're just living the high life.
Listen, bro, you're on the road
in
exotic locations every day of your life.
Yeah, whatever.
Like,
dude,
tomorrow you're heading out to exotic Oregon.
Central Point, Oregon, that you've never heard of.
The weather's going to be fantastic.
I'm in a plane for almost 8 hours tomorrow.
I would love that. I could really use a plane ride for 8 hours right now because I have a lot of riding to
do. Yeah, but I'm a big guy. Plane rides aren't as fun for big
people. Get an exit row. Stretch out, bro.
You don't just get an exit row, John. They make you pay for it.
Pay for it. What are you making all this money for if not to ride in comfort?
That's true. What if money was no object?
Yeah, then that's what you would do.
And I've reached that dream. That's why I'm here with you.
So we go to Hilton Head.
Oh, my gosh.
And the weather turns awful. It's like 50 degrees.
Yeah.
We're in hoodies. And my wife is all upset because she needs sunshine. Like, she just can't go. And I'm upset, and I'm trying to recreate Destin, and that was what taught me that you can't go back and recreate what once was. So,
man.
So I try not to, Johnny. But you got to let Hilton Head be Hilton Head and Destin.
Stories
be Destin.
Are a bummer. Okay, so let me tell you the story because I'm going to forget if I don't tell you. So last night, Curry was like, get off work. She's not been feeling well. She's like, when I get home, I just want to chill out. We've got our dog. One of our dogs has been, we had to take him to the vet because he's not doing well. Like, something's wrong with him. So she's like, when we get home, I just want to stay home. I go, sure. Well, I was getting my iPad ready to go on the flight. So I'm loading up all these Netflix stuff to watch because it's a long flight, two long flights to get to Oregon. My iPad crashes. I can't get it to reboot. I'm like, I got to take this all the way to Green Hills, to the Genius Bar.
Wow, Green Hills the week after Thanksgiving.
It's unbelievable. So she gets
in. It's backed up on a normal day.
So she gets in, drops her code. I go, we got to go to the Apple Store. She's like, okay. I said, we'll get dinner while we're out there. So we go. We get into the Apple Store, and it's piled full of people. obviously, I just figured it's a busy night for the Apple Store because it's always busy in there. And you know how it is now. It's just all stand-up desks. They don't even really have the Genius Bar. It's just they come to you and you're around these work tables. Right. But
it's like a Genius pub table.
Yeah, it's like a, yeah. So I go, well, I don't have anybody standing here, though. And they seem like they're in rows. Like they're making two, like a, you know, like when you're throwing rice at the bride and groom?
Do you still do that?
Well, no, they said that you shouldn't. They throw bird seed.
Right.
Because the rice kills the birds. But I read that's a myth, that rice does not kill. It doesn't swell up in their throats and they die.
Because there'd be no birds in, like, Asia, if that were the case, in, like, rice fields. Because rice,
well, maybe there's not, though. Maybe there's a,
wow.
How do we know? No, but I read that that's a myth and that we just, who knows who started, you know, bird seed companies.
They did it. Bird seed companies have made a killing off of whales.
And whoever makes those little lace, you know, things that you tie up.
It's a conspiracy, bro.
I bet you there's a company that makes those little lace
Russia.
Bird seed things.
It was Russia.
Who makes the lace bird seed things? Do you buy them or did you make them your own when you guys, when you and Laura did it?
You think you're going to make your own bird seed, lacy, whatever?
Where would you buy them? You just buy them from a
wedding
supply store?
Wedding supply things got everything.
How much were they a bag, I wonder? We need them.
Are you asking me from 18 years ago? We didn't even use the internet hardly.
You remember your cruise, though?
Oh, I remember the cruise.
Okay, anyway. So they're lined up like that. And I'm like, well, this is.
They're throwing rice.
And then the guy goes, I checked in. He goes, yeah. He goes, have a seat over here. He goes, we'll be. He goes, just so you know. It's almost like he was giving me a trigger warning. He goes, just so you know, there'll be a loud applause soon, and it'll dissipate, but there's going to be a really loud applause. I was like, okay.
You had to ask.
And then I noticed a big screen behind the people who are lined up in the front of the store, and I'm like, are there going to be like a keynote? Is like Tim Cook coming here? On the – I don't know what's going to happen because I thought, well, they've already done the product announcements for this year. So then I sit down with Curry, and we're sitting at the table. I was like, oh, we'll get dinner soon. I'm sorry this is taking so long. Then I heard this huge, like, people are roaring. It's like, who knows? I did not know what happened. I look up on the screen, and it's a picture of this dude, just a regular-looking dude, and he's wearing his Apple shirt. And then the guy emerges. He just walks out, and I swear he was just a guy, just this guy. And I go, and then he's waving, and then they keep clapping. It was one of those things where people didn't just clap and then stop. They clapped until he went down the line and hugged every last one of them, and it was probably 50 people.
Jeez.
And they're all still clapping and cheering between the clap. And then he walked out, and then somebody was filming it as he got to the end of the row, and then he hugged that guy. Then they stood outside talking, and then everybody else stood around talking. And I noticed some of them had Apple shirts on. Some of them had, like, coats over. So I don't know. And I still, I don't know what it was.
You didn't ask?
I don't know why I didn't ask.
What is wrong with
you? Well, I was
you?
Worried about my iPad. So he comes over. Finally, the guy comes over. And I told Kerry, I said, I bet you this is his last day.
Well, yeah, but
that's what it
we
was.
We all had last days and never had an exit.
But I'm
like
saying
that.
Maybe
what
that's
they
how
do? They
that's
revolutionize the industry.
Maybe that's how they do at the Apple Store.
Wow, what are we doing?
So anybody that works at the Apple Store, which
they
we
really
have,
are geniuses.
Which we have some friends who have worked, like Andrew Gomez worked at the Apple Store.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's their culture. If you work there, certain. But this guy evidently was. Maybe he was the super genius, and he was like, "We're going to miss you, Dave." And he was retired, but he was not retirement age. But maybe Apple age is like you age out like at 40.
Like a dog.
Yeah. It's like it takes a toll dealing with people's computer problems. So all that said, I was talking about last night with Craig. I go, we still don't know, and there's no way to find out what was. But his face was, I'm talking about big as life on this movie-sized screen in the store. He walks out. He was like a rock star. Then he hugs a bunch of people, and then he left. And then he comes over, and I just immediately started like, well, here's what's going on with my iPad. I did not have the I think I'm losing my curiosity. It hurts my feelings that I go, what kind of comedian would not just be like, what is happening here? I told Chris, I said, he's retiring, and I bet you what's ironic about this is, I immediately made it about me. I go, that's the one guy that could fix my iPad, probably. He knows the secret.
I can't believe, Johnny, that you didn't have the wherewithal to ask.
Like, man, if Jerry was here, he could have fixed this, but we can. And we need $150 from you. Anyway, so cut to, we walk out.
We go to Cheesecake Factory.
We go to Cheesecake Factory. How did you know this?
Johnny, I had a feeling.
That's where you go.
Yeah.
So we end up there, and I've not been there in a long time.
If you're going to spend an exorbitant amount of money already at the Apple Store, you might as well head over to Cheesecake.
Yeah. Well, I didn't spend money. They're replacing it. It's under warranty.
Okay.
But I didn't have it, so I don't have an iPad for tomorrow, which is a bummer.
Oh, my gosh.
So just me staring at the back of a seat for...
Bro, they're called books. Your best friend writes them.
Maybe a Dave Ramsey book. I've heard those are real romantic. Anyway, no. So we go to Cheesecake Factory. The guy comes up. He's an older guy.
It's probably the same guy that left the Apple store.
He retired to do the cheesecake. Oh, wouldn't that be it? That'd be the story.
Wow.
God, I should have made it that.
Yep.
I'm not a good liar. Anyway, so he comes up. He takes our order, and he's really nice enough. I order whatever. Curry orders her food. He's kind of slow on the, you know, so he's bringing us the stuff, but it's taking, I was like, well, they're busy. And then I go to the bathroom. I go, when I get back, make sure I get a refill. Because it's one of those things where you come back from the bathroom and then your food's there. That's a great feeling. You know that feeling.
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing. So I was like, I want that feeling. So I go to the bathroom. I come back. Food's still there. I go, huh. Hmm. And I kind of pass the guy. He's at the little station typing in other orders. He looks over at me and gives me a look like,
was I supposed to do something?
Right.
Oh, no.
Then he walks over to our table. I'm telling you, it's been 40 minutes, 30, oh. 30, 40 minutes. He goes, I thought he was going to say, we're out of the chicken or whatever. You know how waiters will do that. I told you our ribs were amazing, but we don't have ribs. Dun, dun, dun.
That's right.
So instead he goes, I got to be real with you. I forgot to put in your order.
Wow.
He goes, I could have just, he said, this is my favorite part. He goes, I could have just blamed it on the kitchen. But that's not the right thing to do. Wow. I'm a man of a certain age, and I just forgot to put it in. And I was a little bit irritated. But again, I'm just like, whatever. He goes, do you still want me to put it in? I go, yeah. And he goes, and then we had to reorder because he could not remember what it was. So it was like we had just arrived, basically. We're just resetting.
He needs to start bringing you cheesecakes.
Kept waiting for him to say, but this is on us. But he didn't say that.
No.
He just goes, do you still want me to put it in? I go, yeah. And I thought, well, he's going to come back and say, we're taking care of this. So then he comes back and he goes, after we put in the order, he goes, I'll get you another refill. Then he goes, just so you know, he goes, I really appreciate it, especially, you know, with it being the holiday season, the spirit of the season. So he's really greasing the wheels of like, thanks for taking one for the team here.
Yeah.
He goes, but I would like to buy you a piece of cheesecake on me. And I was like, okay. I'll let you do that.
We're going to spend $75 and you're going to buy us a piece of cheesecake.
So I said, this is his, you know, and of course, then you get so full there. Everything's so huge. Uh-huh. Then I didn't want cheesecake, but I go, let's get it to go. So he comes back. Curry gets a box. And I go, let's do the gluten-free cheesecake. And he goes, well, we have two. I go, oh, they have two gluten-free. Because really, basically, gluten-free cheesecake is just crustless.
Right.
Or whatever. So they said, we have the Godiva chocolate, and then we have like this mocha, choca, whatever, and it's coffee. And I go, ugh. I thought, well, I may have a bite of the mocha or the chocolate one, the Godiva one. So let's get that one. So Curry goes, that's fine. So he brings it. You know, the cheesecake people brought it from the other counter.
What do you mean by cheesecake people?
The Oompa Loompas over there working. He's singing a little song. So he brings it. And then she goes, and then we still haven't got our bill. And then he brings, he goes, just whenever you're ready. And he kind of slides it over like very, I was like, oh, boy. And I still tipped him. I mean, I was nice. And I go, well, it's fine. You know, it's whatever. He's having a hard night. I've had rough nights. I've only been good at one job in my life, and this is it.
Right.
So I get it. And so we get home, you know, and then Curry starts digging into it. Because she's that thing where she doesn't eat all of her food. But then when she gets home, she's like, food. She starts eating again.
Yeah.
So then we open this. She opens the cheesecake. She's on the other side of the room. She opens the cheesecake, and she goes, you're not going to believe this. I go, what? She goes, he gave us the wrong one. He did us in one more time.
Oh, wow.
So that guy.
But y'all couldn't eat it. Correction. She couldn't eat it.
No, she ate it, but it was the coffee one.
Oh, so you still got gluten-free. Okay,
we got gluten-free, but it was the one that we did not want.
That would have been so good. I would have liked that.
No, I don't. It just, why would you want a bitter dessert?
Tony, why are you a bitter person? Let's start there. Because the truth is,
I got enough bitterness. I need sweet desserts. Desserts are supposed to be sweet.
You can put sweet things in coffee.
I know, but it's
you're
still
supposed to, if you like it that way.
But why not just eat things that are just sweet on top of sweet?
We're
why
talking
do you have
about
to put sweet
drinking,
and bitter
right?
together. No. It wasn't a coffee. It
I
was coffee
that, but
grounds in your.
It isn't grounds. Coffee is a good taste. Like all over the world, people enjoy it, but you and you're arrogant. You're
not
arrogant.
Everybody but me enjoys
you
coffee,
you think
John.
That you're the one who has this down, and everyone, all
well,
the rest of us are wrong.
The point is,
follow the crowd, bro.
Here's what happened, though. When he brought the thing, he goes, thanks so much. Oh, when he brought the bill, we didn't know yet that we had the wrong cheesecake. He goes, well, thanks so much for your patience, and I really appreciate this. And, you know, we'll hope you'll come back and see us again before Christmas. And I wanted, I mean, I immediately thought, well, it won't be long now. I mean, I almost said it, and then I thought, that's really hateful.
It's just around the corner.
Yeah. Look at this. Oh, man. Yeah. We haven't missed it. Get the biggest goose in the window.
That is funny.
But anyway, so that was it was a bad way. Sometimes I still show compassion, but some of you just go, that guy's not cut out for this job. And I had jobs like that. One time I worked at Home Depot, there was a lady that came through, and I was doing the whole, like, sir, I have a very resting, angry face anyway. And this lady came through, and I was just ringing people up, just like an automaton, not even paying attention. And just, right. And this lady, like, got on to me. She was like, excuse me? And she's like, it's not my job to make you happy with your job. I'm your customer right now. And I got so mad, you know, like at that, like, how dare she, you know? And I look back at that, and I go, I needed that rebuke. She definitely was seeing that I was totally phoning it in.
Wow.
And so if you're out there, whoever you are, strange lady who screamed at me.
Call it. You can tweet at Johnny _W. And
maybe she goes place to place and just does that to everybody, right. In which case I take it back. But
it is hard because you want to go, the person who's willing to say that has a level of, like, look, if you really want to help somebody,
yeah,
then is direct. Like, if you're in community with someone, go direct. That's great because they trust you. If you don't even know them, it's the best way, really, to just, like, absolutely... Because we wasn't stopping
her. Well, she's never going to see me again, and she has no... There's nothing going to happen to her if she...
Right.
She was like she reported me.
She was going to get what she was buying either way.
Yeah.
Now, if you were in the aisle and she needed you to help find a 3/4-inch drywall screw or something, and you were refusing and wouldn't talk to her, that's different. But you're literally checking out at the register.
Yeah, and it was just, I wasn't making eye contact with her, I guess, and I wasn't being cheery.
I know you appreciate that lady, but I don't know. I don't really
appreciate that. You think that lady was a problem? Well, here's the thing. I see this about coaches all the time. I listen to a lot of sports talk radio, and they talk about good coaches know that players are individuals and how to get the most out of each player.
Yeah.
So what do you think you are? I remember Travis Wyrick, when we were doing our studio record, he was talking about that, about how some people play better angry and they sing better angry. So he would basically, like, try to egg them on.
Yeah.
And be like, no, that sucks. Yeah. Do it again. Knowing they'd be on edge and they would sing better. Of course, he did a lot of, like, industrial and intense kind of music stuff too. Alternative music, so he needed that for some of his acts. And then some people, if you say something negative, it breaks them down and they have no confidence.
Yeah.
So what do you think you are?
Well, in the studio, I was definitely the B.
Yeah.
Like, if I can...
Well, we were scared. That was our first real record.
There could be, but I've done other things, lay down little demos and stuff, where if I get it the first or second time, great.
Yeah,
but if it has to go 3 or 4 on the easiest part of the whole thing, then it does. And that's the only time things get in my head.
Returns.
I don't get nervous going to the microphone to speak. I don't get nervous opening up to sing, even if I don't have a voice. But recording it,
because
I have zero confidence there, because I don't have a front man recording voice. I just don't.
Or a man. I'm kidding, John. See, now I'm doing it to you, John. You're important.
Yeah. You know what? I don't have to have, like, constant affirmation or anything. I do want honesty. So, for example, before we started here, I'm under a very sensitive time deadline right now for a project.
Yeah.
Because it has to do with somebody's failing health. And so I'm really, really trying to work hard, but not just crank things out. You know, I want them to be good and I want to be sensitive to how everybody feels about it. So I actually reached out. I'd finished a sample chapter and asked my agent, you know, to look at it. But every time I send that, I still struggle. Because what I need to hear, I know maybe, hey, this doesn't work.
Right. You need the truth, but you also want the truth to be, don't change a word.
Hey, you did pretty well. You know? Yeah. And he said he liked it and then made quite a few minor edits, just the word choice things that helped me do it. And I love that. If I know you like it and then you add edits, mm-hmm. I'm great. If I think you didn't give it a chance, you know, and I rarely ever just whiff. Like, I whiffed one time. I remember I turned in a thing, and there's a guy whose name I could name that you would know, who's a really famous preacher. He's not in our circles, but he's a really famous preacher in, like, the Reform circles. And they wanted me to write some samples to maybe do a book with him. I think he still hasn't done a book.
It's a Reformed circle. It's like, when you know, my favorite part of the original Grinch is when they're all standing in a circle singing, and then he comes down with the sleigh to bring back all their presents.
Yeah.
And then the people who are holding hands open, like, a gate.
Yeah.
To let him in. That's a reformed circle.
There you go.
Anyway, go ahead.
There you go. Hi-yo.
Hey, Anna.
I sent it, and the guy is from Europe and has an accent.
Okay.
And so I went out of the box.
It's clap! You call this writing?
Well, it was very like I went real meta.
Yeah.
Like I went like, ooh, what if a young minister and this advanced minister were sitting in a coffee shop and having a theological discussion? So I just took it because they didn't really give me any boundaries. It was like, just be creative. Let's see what happens. Yeah. So I just okay. You tell me to be creative, I might just go off the rails. Mm-hmm. And I did. And then I described his accent.
Yeah.
In a real metaphorical, flowery type, like I don't know what, like butterflies come out of his mouth or something. I don't know what it was.
But
whatever it was like real, I used all the words.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And
right.
I put them in there and made this big, vivid thing, and they go, hey, the one thing this guy, his pet peeve in life is people mentioning his accent. Because he lives in the United States. Like, he does not want, but that would have been nice to know beforehand.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But the deal was, I had focused so much on some, we didn't even try another one.
Well, and that's the thing, living in the South.
I take it back. We did send him a sample that I edited, and he actually liked it.
Yeah.
We still never did a book, but he liked it. He told me it was, quote, jolly good. That didn't really happen. But the first one,
that's
no.
a very
Swing
and you
and
thought
and
when you read it in his accent.
It's surely good.
What do you? It is interesting. What do you think about women who are attracted to an accent? Like, is Laura more like, oh, James Bond? Is she like? Does she like the accent?
Do you
thing?
Know that Laura truly?
I bet there's people who are irritated by British accents out there.
I've never met one.
They seem more intelligent. There's something about it where you just go, you know what? Even if you're saying the stupidest thing.
Yeah. It's like putting glasses on your voice.
It is.
You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. you can have this conversation now. No, I do.
It's like an ascot and glasses for your voice. It is.
Yeah. You know what? I told you that I have the British man Siri on my phone. I don't have Siri the female.
Because you don't want to take directions from a female.
It has zero. Wow. No.
This is
zero
very,
to do with
this
that.
This is very revealing.
It just seems interesting to me. So
Tom Papa has a bit about that, about how he doesn't respect the GPS, and he knows it's because it's a woman's voice.
Jesus.
He's like, she'd be like, 2 kilometers, then turn left. He's like, you're adorable. I'm going to go straight. So that's your problem. Go ahead.
No. I really enjoy it. So, but here's the deal. Like, when I call my mom, it mm-hmm. will not recognize the word mom.
So it makes adjustments.
It has to be mum.
Mum.
So literally my mom is in my phone as mum. And I almost did it the other day. When I go to speak into the speaker of the phone, I have to speak in a British accent for it to make sense. So it's kind of like this little funny thing I do in my life. So mm-hmm. Sadie will be riding with me all the time. And I'm like, hey, Sadie, hey, you want some fried chicken? I'm like, call mum. And when I go to push the button on my phone, and I found myself, I was talking into a microphone or something like that, and I did it instinctively. I picked up the microphone. I was like, hello, call. And I was like, why am I speaking in a British accent right
wow.
now? Johnny, it's weird what
Something's
I do.
It's wrong.
But you know what? I just do it. But yes, to your previous question, my wife, we don't do the whole celebrity crush thing.
Well, no, I don't mean
we
that.
We don't talk about
the
being
hall
attracted
pass
to other people.
No.
Like, we just don't. I don't get that. Like, I don't think people. I don't know. It's not like some.
You're her celebrity crush, John. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I know this is going to be shocking to people.
Yeah.
But I think that my wife likes me better than all the other men in the world.
Interesting.
Yeah. And trust me, for the first, 15 years, I'm like, why? I have all this low self-esteem. And I'm like, hey, maybe that's part of the miracle of marriage. And God really did tie our hearts together. She just likes me. And I'm okay. I used to be falsely humble about that because I don't look as nice as I get all that. She just loves me and actually like. Isn't that great?
This is adorable.
I wish she was here right now.
I do too.
I think that British accents can add depth. Do you remember, by the way, when I was in college,
mm-hmm.
like my junior or senior year, or maybe a sophomore, that I had that English class that we had to do Pygmalion, which is Pygmalion was originally
like rugby,
name.
Right?
No.
No. What is it?
Go long. No, it was
when you make a
You're killing me here because you know I need to think it.
You make a man out of a pig.
Sorry, Pygmalion is the original name for My Fair Lady. Okay, that's
what okay.
And My Fair Lady is the story. You know My Fair Lady.
Yeah.
Okay, so they take this woman who was, you know, living on the streets or whatever, is very much in poverty. It sounds really, by the way, today, like absolutely a horrible premise that should be offensive or whatever. But anyway, and they teach her how to speak correctly.
Right. And civilize her.
Right. And so it's all this. But I had to speak in a British accent to do the play in the class.
Yeah.
And I have a small one that's still really awful now. But back then, I remember you working with me on
the
British accent.
I coached you?
Because I was so terrified. Because I don't mind speaking in front of people, but like that I just can't do. And you always tell me, like, John, it's awful. Like, you don't. Like, you have a really good one.
No, I'm not going to do it because I'm not. But it's
but so
okay.
You can distinguish, though, between Australian, Scottish, Irish, and English.
Yeah. Or then, like, even there's, like, English, like Cockney, like when you're from, like, almost like a rural area of England. You have a Cockney accent. It's very different. It's like,
And you have your Irish that you always use the same word, which is?
The key to an Irish accent is the word potatoes.
Show us.
Potatoes. Yeah. If you can say potatoes,
and then
it lends the other. You just say sentences with the word potatoes. Does the meal come with potatoes? And then you just keep going with potatoes.
There you go. And your Scottish, it always plays off of Mike Myers, usually, because... and you would also say Luke, like...
Luke.
So you used to make me laugh so hard because this is all before you were a comedian. You're like, John, the key is you say instead of look, you say look. You're like, oh, look, look. And then you go, look, I am your father. Like you always did that. And I would laugh. And I was like, God, Johnny's so funny.
Man.
He should be a comedian. And then I don't know if we have an Australian.
No, I don't.
You don't do Australian because that's
then
out
it's
there.
Just, yeah, throw another shrimp on the Barbie.
Right. You're just doing what everyone's doing. Yeah. Austria, eh? Anyway. How did we get there? How did we possibly?
John, there's no reason.
We were talking about
that,
and then this happened.
Yeah,
how do we get back to that?
Nobody's still listening to this.
Hey, you were here last Sunday, by the way.
I was, and you got to preach.
And it's very, very rare that I look.
It has
up
been
and
more
see.
Rare. It's been good.
Oddly enough, because I do preach a lot, but it seems like it has been in perfect sync. And I'm actually questioning there may be a conspiracy here. It's been perfectly synced that the weeks you happen to be here, I happen to not be preaching. And I think you need to let me know why you've been scheduling.
You need to sync up your preaching schedule with my tour schedule. How about that?
I don't.
That way you're on the
off
days.
You want me to take this entire community of faith followers, and you want me to change everything that should be for them for one guy.
First of all, community of faith followers needs work.
Faith followers is Andrew's thing. I actually have never said it before that moment. I don't say faithful. That's like his thing, but it's no.
Eventually, it's going to be okay to say Christian again and just be like, "Hey, we're Christians."
I like
now.
Christian,
it's like
actually.
It's almost like a pejorative.
Thing. I do say. Well, actually, originally was a pejorative thing. That's
right.
in the Book of Acts. They begin to, actually. I don't think it was in Acts. They called them of the way. Then there was a place they called them Christians.
Little Christ.
But it was always meant to be derogatory.
Yeah.
You know, I read a thing. I forget which Roman ruler was talking about them and how it's just funny to hear what they were saying about this group of people, like how they get together and share and what they do and, you know, oh my goodness, how they love each other and love this one they've never met who supposedly has come back from the grave and now they can't see him yet they trust him as if they can. I'm a huge believer in the testimony of the enemies. You know, what your friends say about you it may be very true, but what your enemy says about you, you can extract so much truth from it.
Yeah.
So if your enemy says, you know what, man, you're just a pushover. I mean, you're always being nice to people who are not nice to you. And what you should do is stand up because you're a little wuss. Well, what you can extract from that if you're in a court of law even is there's no doubt you're being nice to people. You know, there's evidence in there because your enemy wouldn't want to – he's not casting you in a positive light, so you can trust what he's saying.
It's a weird thing to say in a court of law about somebody. But
well,
Exhibit A, Your Honor.
I don't think I literally meant
– No, I know what you mean.
I crossed those two.
No, it's true, though. Yeah, if somebody that doesn't even like you says something that has something that you could imbue positive something from, that's more powerful.
Do you remember when you were here Sunday what I talked about? Let's go there. Let's see if it really made a difference. You were here. I talked about something. Go. And you told me I did a good job. So we're going to see if you really meant that or not. Wow.
It was so good. I remember that, buddy. That thing.
You have no clue.
I do. I remember.
One word.
Oh, it was only one word?
One word title.
That was the key?
It was a standalone. Farfignugan.
Give me a hint and I'll remember. I'll get. What's the first letter?
You were picking up your phone to go to the podcast.
No, I'm not going to the podcast. I'm going
to go to live stream. G.
Is it Jesus?
It's G.
G.
It's a hard G. G. Gr. It's got an R in there. Gr. Here's one that Saturday Night Live, you know. Who do we fight in World War II?
The Nazis.
I was going to say Nazis. Oh, my gosh. Tony, was gratitude.
Gratitude.
Oh, my gosh, man.
In our attitude.
I didn't say that at
all.
Oh,
no, but you should. Why not? That would have run.
That's like an old school.
You know what? I remembered it if you'd done that.
You would not.
A little more gratitude. You're
rhyming and alliteration. It's all a farce. None of it causes people to remember things.
Your altitude is determined by your attitude.
That's been done so many times. Dude, John
Maxwell.
If you had
gratitude, you could have
graltitude.
That stuff.
John Maxwell was doing altitude, like back before, while you were still in diapers when you were
like
10.
No, that's like Winston Churchill, probably.
Well, yeah.
Maxwell stole it.
I'm not saying he was original.
Maxwell, I'm calling you out.
And we want you to come on this podcast.
In a court of law, I'm going to say you're a pushover. And furthermore, you're a wuss. Can you read that last part back to me? Says wuss.
Can you spell it for me?
Yeah. Yeah, but no, that's good. Gratitude, I remember now.
Jeez, Johnny.
I remember.
I wish I was making a difference in the world.
I remember. I was deeply moved. And then it just wore off. These things happen, John. You know, it's like a henna tattoo. You know what I mean?
Is it?
Like it's indelible, sort of.
Right.
Like I need it.
Cause a rash,
that's why you need church. You
tattoo.
Go back every 6 days or whatever, because you're like,
wow.
Hey, look, my gratitude's worn off. I need a touch up, and then the guy's like, all right, you know, you could just get this permanent. And you're like, I'm good, because you're not quite sure.
Right, you're not sure if it's going to take yet. Man,
you feel really disappointed in me.
No, not at all. I put you on the spot. That's the same thing as people.
I wasn't looking at my phone though. It wasn't like I was like not listening.
People coming up to me. We talked about this in staff meeting this week. I really am trying hard to remember people's names when I first meet them.
It's like hard.
I'm really, really working on it. And I really feel like, I know this sounds pseudo-spiritual, but I do feel like that like God's given me some assistance. Like he's helped me be a little more present. Because that's the thing. What's crazy is if I meet you and then I find out where you're from, what you do, I can remember all of that.
Yeah.
I can, man, they were from Pennsylvania. He worked in a steel factory. I don't know. This is not the normal kind of visitors that come. We were in a court of law and all these things. But I just can't recall the name usually. Yeah. So anyway, but when somebody walks up to you who's been here for a long time and says to you, you don't know my name, do you?
Oh, man, it's tough.
I'm going to tell you something. I told the staff, I said, in that situation, like if we talk nicely all the time and you suspected it on your name and you have the gall to walk up and say, you don't know me, do you? You don't know my name is.
That's tough.
I would be tempted to say, I'm not sure this is the church you should be at. Like, I mean, seriously, if you want to embarrass me or call me out on that, if you want to say, hey, listen, I have a feeling that maybe you don't remember my name and that's cool, I'm going to tell you. But if you want to like judge
me. Make it a contest.
Like I meet hundreds of people, and they all know my name because my name's on the screen, you know.
Wow,
today,
this is really arrogant.
No, it's not.
I'm just.
But if I happen to forget one, and I need to maybe apologize for that. But holding your feet to the fire,
it's tough.
I don't. You know.
Do you remember this? You know what I'm thinking of? Do you remember this situation? We were at church and we'd been there for a year.
Yes.
And on the worship team,
oh no,
there was a girl that played piano.
This makes my heart hurt, like just remembering this moment.
And it was her birthday.
Oh my gosh, it was a practice.
And we were going to sing happy birthday to her.
And we did this big, like, operatic.
The big group of us.
Yeah, there's probably 20 people there.
I want to say it was in the youth thing.
No, we were on the main stage.
Were we?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're singing. And John and I would do it because we do harmony together. So he'd play, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear. And John looks at me like, I'll follow you because you'll know her name. I'm waiting on John because he'll know her name.
We just stopped.
And we,
happy birthday, dear.
We didn't even go to God bless you. We could have even, that's your out,
that
right?
That is a cheesy thing.
It is.
And we stared at each other for about.
And she was like, you don't know my name. How long have we been going there? It wasn't a year. Maybe it wasn't a year.
I don't know, man.
But you remember her name?
No.
You still don't remember it? Her name is Angel.
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry, Angel.
Angel,
you could call me out on it.
If we were out, if you're still out there, Angel, we're so sorry.
Listen.
I felt like a heel. It still makes me kind of like cringe.
No, because I want to know. That's my point of the other thing. Like, don't come call me out. I want to know. Yeah. I want to try.
It's just so many
things.
So don't
condemn me for it. But
like Paul Reiser, comedian Paul Reiser, he used to have a bit about that, about how you can only hold in so much information in your head. So, like, once you get full, everything you get in is going to knock something else out. So, like, if you give me a new phone number, I now forgot my social security number. Like, you can't.
Right.
That's just how it works.
Yep.
And so I think that's what happened. We just had too many names, and then we didn't remember the name of the person who was on our worship team.
We were on the worship team with her. And there is that moment, though, you pass that you know you should know, and now it's embarrassing to ask.
Yeah, it's
like, oh, well, we've been talking to each other now and smiling and saying nice things, you know. But that's when you got to do the due diligence to go find out elsewhere.
Or you introduce that person to somebody else and do the whole, like, well, this is George. And then and then George is like, you are? And then you listen and you...
See, I've seen people, I've tried those tricks, and they know what I'm doing sometimes.
Yeah.
And they're like,
they just go,
who am I, John? Tell them. Oh, you know, like, I'm telling you, man, this is
brutal.
I have nightmares about these things.
I'm trying to trap you. I'm sorry that happens. And I forget. That happens to me a lot, where I'll forget a thing, and I'll meet somebody, or I'll go back to the same church, you know, 18 months later. It's like, man, these people have hired me twice, and I really need to make sure I find the guy.
Right.
You know, when I walk in and that guy's there, I'm supposed to recognize him now.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't. So sometimes I'll go to, like, their Facebook page.
Yeah.
The week before and be like, all right, he's got glasses. He's
that's the hardest thing for me is. Being out in the community and there's kids who came through youth group.
Right.
We had thousands that came through, you know, we had a pretty large youth group, but over those, what, almost 10 years. I mean, my gosh, you do a special night, you know, you make hundreds of kids that walk in, you kind of, they might stay for a year. They might stay for a couple weeks. And again, and I'll see someone I know, like,
and they'll remember you.
Yes, and I'm like, oh man, I know.
But you have the thing of, like, they look different; they're older now.
Well, but they don't know that. That's what I always
they don't recognize.
Hey, you know, last time I saw you, you had like a shaved head and a purple nose ring, or you know, like, you know,
what kind of youth group are you running? Right?
I mean, people change a lot between 13 and 23.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
And so
I remember when I went through my shaved head, purple nose ring
goodness,
phase.
Johnny.
Mom was furious.
You made it cool though.
I did.
But no, everybody changes, you know, in a different way when they are going through that. And I guess, but that's the thing though, I've changed too. I've lost my hair somewhat. Well, I took it off on purpose, lost it. I won. I won my hair, the battle.
I think it's like, in the same way that Custer won.
Well, you know, the deal is I don't have to worry about it anymore. So that's good. I will say, from Sunday, something that's been helping me.
Okay.
And it goes along with this. Because with the gratitude, I did a lot of Brene Brown quotes. Because she has her stuff on gratitude and community is just unbelievable.
You know,
they're not Christian books, you know, but just full of basically that being grateful is scientifically, and we know this is also biblically true, that psychologists and psychiatrists have researched that, like, the key to the people who are most fulfilled in life, you know, most content, it generally the people who are the most grateful, and often the people who have suffered the most are the most grateful. So, like, there's this, again, it's that reverse logic of spiritual reality, that most of the way that you live your life, you know, and how that you desire things physically, the best is going to be the opposite reality of the spirit. That the spirit leads you to a different way. So it's better to give than to receive. That's counterintuitive. That's not how we feel. And yet when you do it, it's true. You know, you receive, and you're never content, and you give, and wow, there's a great feeling that you have there. So same kind of thing. Somehow the most grateful people, regardless of their circumstances, are the people most fulfilled in this life. And the two points I really said, how do you get there? Okay, you know that. That's like stepping on a scale and realizing you need to lose 50 pounds. You know, that doesn't make the next day easier. It just makes you kind of know where you need to move. And I really believe the two things in our family we're working on is being present and being prayerful. Those are alliterated. You could have remembered those. They didn't rhyme.
I remember the present part and the prayerful part. Yeah. I did not remember the G word, and I apologize.
It's okay.
It's just, I remember attitude and the gratitude.
Altitude. But that, man, that present thing is the hardest thing for me. I just like to actually be in this moment. You and I, all those, I remember in the band, always scrapping to get ahead, always having, and I think we're still there. We're both still working.
We're waiting on a moment, one, dare to be great moment that will change the direction or the whatever.
Yep. Always an email or a phone call that you're waiting on.
Yeah.
Because you've always submitted something or have a hook in the water kind of thing. And you still have to live there. Like I still, you're pursuing bookings. I'm pursuing
writing. It's part of it, but the living in the in-betweens is I'm finding way more peace there now than I ever have. Is because you just realize that's where the magic is. That's where it's real. That's where everything happens. You know, even last night I was with my wife and, you know, our plans weren't. That wasn't what our original plan for that night was. And we definitely didn't plan to be at Cheesecake Factory for 2 hours. But it's like we're together and we're laughing about it.
Yeah.
And it's a funny story and we were together. And it's like that wasn't the plan, but that's that in-between moment that makes you a stronger couple. It's that weird thing that it does. It's like a glue, you know.
Well, your best adventures are rarely planned.
Right.
Or you know, that's what makes them so great is it being unexpected. And that's
I stiffed the guy, but I don't feel good about it. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like I made a complaint to the manager and I got him fired. But that's part of the adventure, John. No, I'm just kidding. I tipped him well. Adventure. I tip everybody well. I'd never stiff anybody. I just feel bad about it. It would not matter if I got the wrong food. I ordered a steak and got lime jello. I just feel like I can't bring myself. I know somebody's making, $2.75 or whatever an hour plus tips. It's like, all right.
Right. I try to remember that it's kind of like with children. When a kid is dealing with some sort of emotional or cognitive issue that causes them to not be able to hear the thing you need to tell them so that they can improve in that emotional or cognitive issue, then you have to recognize that the problem is blocking the solution.
Right.
And that may feel frustrating to you, but if they can't listen well, then what's the point of yelling at them? You need to find another way. And that's easy to remember, but the frustration of it is high. But now that being, you're right, man, the in-betweens, the moments you don't, it's like Destin thing again. You can't reproduce that cruise, that first cruise or that whatever. But I live as if I can. I can't, but I live as if emotionally I can, that I'm going to, that this next phone, and in fact, that's in my, I have a thing in my OneNote called daily declarations. I don't necessarily say them out loud every day or whatever, but I try to read them. They're things I want to remind myself of. They're almost like new liturgy for me.
Yeah,
that remind me. And one of them, in fact, I'll just probably best to read it because I'll mess it up.
We did liturgy at the end of the service. I remember that. Yep.
I did a prayer at the end that we responded to. It was out of the Book of Common Prayer. Things like I must be diligent or work hard to enter the rest of Jesus today, because that's what it means to abide there. Like it's going to take hard work for me to rest. That's what Scripture says. Be diligent to enter rest. So in order for me to change my mindset, I have to work hard to rest. And that is not just going to happen.
Yeah.
Like I have to return in those things. I'm not the sum of my faults and failures. There's more to my being than my failures and my constant need for improvement in so many areas. Like I can't sum myself up with what I lack. And then also I'm not the sum of my gifts and my abilities. There is more to my being than what I am good at. Even when others praise such things in me, meaning they just want to, go on that. I'm not the sum of my work or my successes. There is much more to my being and my legacy in this life than what I accomplished through my daily work and my pursuit of important projects. And then this is the big one for me. Nothing other than Christ and real life with his people will leave me complete and fulfilled today. There is no email, phone call, check in the mail, debt paid off, growth of my church, or stellar news that may come today that will render me any less or more dependent upon Christ for everything. Every breath, every heartbeat, every moment with family, every moment of change in mine and others' lives, everything. If I fail or if I succeed, I am dependent upon Christ exactly the same, so I can be grateful in all things. If good or bad news comes, they are both merely additions to the whole because I am already whole in Christ and his church without them. Like, I know that I get that, but there's something about revisiting that I think is so key. I think that's what liturgy is about. Yeah. I think that's really what daily walking with with the church is supposed to be about.
Yeah.
It's a reminder because you don't put on the armor every day. You don't wake up in your armor. You got to put it on. You know.
I remember one time I was I've got a friend who's writing a book or working on an idea for a book about people who start charities, and it's about giving back. And he wants to do these series of interviews, and he's trying to figure out if it can be like a podcast or a TV show or something, like where he gets them to talk about what they do and what their aha moment was when they realized this is what I want to do and this is the population I want to serve,
whatever that is.
And I told him about it. I told him a story. I had lunch with him yesterday, and I was telling him a story about our friend Chuck Lester. He used to go to this church in Knoxville Christian Center. They do all the big concerts.
Yeah.
And so one time they had this big CCM artist of the day, bunch of hits in the 90s. I won't say who it was because it doesn't matter. But they were just kind of in the middle of their biggest successful period, and they were doing a solo show at this church. You know, 700 to 800 people were there. And he said he was just kind of phoning it in. Well, at that church, their pastor would do this thing in the middle of their shows if they booked a concert there where he would come on stage and like interview you.
Yeah.
And like, what, tell me about your relationship with God. What's it been like traveling? What is God showing you right now? And all these really like touchy feely spiritual questions.
Probing questions.
Right. Yeah. And so he said the concert was like really, you could tell it's real paint by the numbers. Like, all right, this is Knoxville, tomorrow's Toledo, whatever. Yeah. Let's just get through it. And then he didn't know that was, he kind of got blindsided by that interview. But when he started talking about, this artist started talking about the things that God had done for him and his salvation experience or whatever, it reminded him of it. And he said, like, the second half was totally different.
Wow.
It was like just saying those things out loud, like you said, it just, like, it made it real again to him. And so, I don't know, as much as we talk about it being, you know, the daily affirmations being psychobabble, but I think there is a spiritual grounded reason to do it. Liturgy, well, I mean, it has a place.
You know, it works in your family and your marriage.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that we love our wives.
Yeah.
Does it mean that we don't need to tell them? And it doesn't mean that it doesn't deepen that love for both of us when we do express it yet again, you know?
Yeah, I do marriage conferences with this guy named Ted Lowe, and he has this part of his show where he talks about tell your spouse that they're attractive to you. And he goes, wives, just tell us that we're doing a good job. He says, we're so stupid, we'll believe it. Don't worry about, you know, he goes, or Urban Meyer is, you know, because we were in Ohio doing this one show. He says, Urban Meyer is such winningest coach of blah, blah, blah.
Right.
He says, he goes in and motivates those players day in, day out to give everything for him. He gives them stickers, and he shows a helmet of Ohio State with these stickers because they get these for individual recognition. They get little Buckeyes on their – some kind of leaf, I think, on one of the helmets. But anyway, it's like this is their reward, and it's like, and it works because those affirmations work. It's even though it's like he could just do it. It could just be him manipulating behind the scenes, but it's like we don't think to do that in our marriage. We're just like, look, I told her I loved her.
Yeah.
And if I change my mind, I'll let her know. It's like, no, we got to keep saying these things.
And again, there's a whole book about it called The Gospel Primer or Primer, depending on if you're...
A primer?
Yeah. Lots of people say primer. I think it's sort of a British thing. But it was actually a friend who works with Keith and Kristen Getty, works for their company. We were having lunch, and I bought them for the staff now. The church bought them for the staff. It's a little book, and it is... The premise is that... That's really, if you read all of Paul's writings, that was what he did. He even says, I look forward to preaching the gospel to those of you who have believed. It's like, why would you want to retell something they already know to people who already know it and believe it?
Yeah.
And his point was, in every one of his letters, he would rehearse or retell the gospel as he's writing it. And it would obviously, he would stop and break out into praise in his writing.
Yeah.
Thanks be to God for his glorious gift or whatever. And then it would lead him to what to do with it. So now in Ephesians 1 through 2, when I totally rehearse the whole gospel, he now feels ready to say in 3 and 4, here's how you live in community. Here's how you give abundantly and generously. Here's how you, you know, here's how you can do all things in Philippians through Christ. But we always jump to 3 and 4, and we don't rehearse the gospel in the first half. So we go put Philippians 4:13 on our soccer bag and miss the fact that actually that was all... That was a conclusion of a much deeper thing. I mean, guys, if you play soccer and you put it on your bag, it's fine. But you know but there's so much about the gospel that and the biggest thing for me that I rehearse that gets me is I have to remind myself, and it's in that book and it's my words for it. I'm reminded that scripturally I do not contribute one iota to my salvation.
Right.
I have no contribution to give. I have things to do that are good works and all those things. They all come after. But if, and that's challenging to me. If you went and tell some church, if you told a lot of Christians today, listen, did you know no matter how good you are today, you're not contributing one iota to salvation, to heaven, to God's feelings for you? What? Are you saying what we do doesn't matter? And I always say, well, when you start asking those questions, you're finally asking the questions that Paul asked. But until you have a gospel radical enough that causes someone to cry foul and say, you must be telling people they can do whatever they want to do, then you may not have the same gospel, at least that Paul did, that was radical enough to cause those of us who are Pharisees to start shifting uncomfortably in our chairs a little bit. Yeah. So anyway, I do think it's important to have those daily rehearsals and remind yourself, you know, of what is true, because I think it continues to make change in your life instead of it just being a one-time thing. And you're right. The critics will be like, well, that's just psychobabble. You do it everywhere else in life. It's not – if it works in psychology, there's a reason it does, because psychology, all truth that exists inside of it is God's truth. Like, you know, you don't have to even believe in him. You have to believe that God made air in order to breathe it to survive.
Liturgy, bro. That's where it's at.
Come on, man.
You got to have liturgy if you don't want lethargy.
Oh, my gosh.
I preach.
Well, what do we see? So you've done altitude and attitude, liturgy and lethargy. You need you got to round it off, man. You can't leave it hanging like that. what was the one that they used to say? Oh, you know what I thought of?
What?
This is great. I'm not going to say his name, but there was an like straight up old school Church of God, Pentecostal evangelist that used to come to that same church you were talking about where we forgot her name. And I won't say his name, but remember the time he was preaching and he had that real Southern delivery? And the old scriptures get kind of mixed up in people's minds. He goes, you all know how it says in the Bible that we are...
We're above and not beneath. I'm the head and not the tail. I'm the whatever. He's the head and we're the... And then we were like...
He said, he's the head, and somebody yelled out,
we're the tail.
Because the Bible says we're the head and not the tail. But he's like it was like power of suggestion. And then that person in the crowd said, tail, he said, go, Johnny.
You may be his tail, but I'm his body.
He was like, he didn't miss a beat.
It was amazing. You may be his tail. I think he planted that guy.
You may be his tail, but I'm his body.
He planted the guy to shout out tail.
Yeah.
Gosh.
And it worked, bro. Here we are, 20 years later. Still talking about the tail, the head, and the body. Oh, my goodness. And, guys, isn't that just like our Lord? Wait, no. Sorry. No, that was too sharp of a religious turn. So I love that. Guys, we do appreciate you listening. It was fun today. Good to catch up. You're heading out to Oregon tomorrow.
Oregon.
And I might be heading to Atlanta next week. I'm not sure. I might have to go for a day.
But running the roads, brother.
You know, everybody's doing our thing, getting ready for Christmas. Our decorations are up. Feels good.
I don't have anything up.
Okay, that's
but
good.
We'll get it up before Christmas. We'll get the tree up before, because we're having the family in.
Yeah.
My brother and my niece.
You're hosting here this year.
My two nieces come in. We're not hosting. We're hosting, like, they come and stay with us, like, the 26th to the 28th.
Gotcha.
So they'll come stay with us, and we usually try to decorate then because it's for the kids.
So you decorate after Christmas for the kids?
Wow. I'll put it up around Christmas time, but we're just not. The dogs will come over and pull all the ornaments off. It's a nightmare. Yeah.
Such a Scrooge. Well, anyway, I hope you have a merry holiday season, Johnny. I'm sure we'll be back next week, and send us your questions, your comments, things you want to talk about.
Concerns.
And, things that we messed up. You know, if you're going to tell us.
We know they'll send that.
You know, we'd love to hear all about it. We love that stuff. So, anyway, we do have a good time. Look forward to talking to you next week on Talk About It Now.
Need more of God's power in your life? I'm Christina Patterson, host of the Teach Us to Pray podcast, providing practical tips on how to grow your faith through prayer. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.